I'll talk to you then. That's right. Yeah, right. Yes. I'm only answering that briefly first. That I said to you, my unit, with a lot of many others in the 44th team, I was a medical unit, you know, was shot at by a German, I suppose a spearhead division, you know, breaking through about 50, 60 miles south of Brussels, I suppose they broke through. But we were somewhere in the Bruges Canal area, but just the same, we were south of that. But anyway, we broke out the unit, we were shot at, and it was just every man for himself. The remnants of my unit was already broken up, but those who, we arrived at a farmhouse sometime in the early morning, after being shelled out of a place. Well, the story was, we were bombed out of one place at sort of evening time, and we went on in our vehicles, we found a farm, and we billeted in there, and they moved the cows out. It was in the dark, and we were lying in cow mud as well as straw to have a nap. But we were shelled out of there by sort of 2 or 3 in the morning, and then we got into our ambulances and lorries and proceeded along a road south, moving south. And as dawn came, the whole thing suddenly pulled up. We heard the noise of these fighters coming, the fighter bombers, whatever they were, peeling off. And I could see them, and I was at the back of one of the lorries, and I jumped out, because everything stopped. But the vehicle coming along was an ambulance, but everybody pushed in panic. So I was pushed, and I fell on the ground, and the next thing, there was an ambulance over me. And I could hear these things screaming down. I thought, well, I'm safer here, you know, under you know, the metal part of the engine at the front of this. And I thought, Christ, everybody else jumped in this, the side of the road, the whole of our little mob. And it was a ditch. What looked like grass, you know, quite tall like this, the side of the road, was actually a ditch, but with the grass and things growing up in it. And they were all wet through. I was the only dry person.
We got through this bit.
Yeah.
To the point where... There was a boat coming up to a jetty.
Yes, right. I told you about the drink, didn't I?
Yeah, all that bit, yeah.
Yeah, well, I saw this...
How did you actually get onto a boat and get across to a unit?
I'll tell you, that's right. Well, what happened, the Navy people, I told you, who had stopped me and said, that way, sir. I said, no, I'm a medic, I'm on my own, and I'm going this way. And I could see this vessel coming in, a little stone, or concrete pier, not a stone pier, concrete pier. Well, the next thing, a plane came over and bombed it. Put a hole in it. So I went back to the Navy lads and got some stretchers, and we breached this hole with some bits of lime and these stretchers so that people could get across. But I was the first one there, so I got off, and I remember a dog ran up there. It was the dog, and it ran to the end of the pier, and there was an officer who got off this boat and shot the dog, because, you know, the dog was just a menace anyway. And I can remember that as though yesterday. Anyway, I went aboard, but I had a tie on. I was a medic, and I had a khaki, I had a battle dress and an overcoat on, but I also had a tie. And the rat must have thought I was an officer, because he said, follow me, sir. And I went down below, led me to a cabin in this boat, and of course I hadn't slept for over 24 hours. It may have been we didn't sleep the previous night, you see, so I was a bit shattered. So I can remember lying in this bunk in this, it was one of the old cross-channel boats, I'm sure. And the next thing I knew was being wakened with a cup of tea in Folkestone. I was, oh, we're here. And I got up, I said, where? He said, Folkestone. So that was it. I couldn't remember the journey over or anything to do with it. Even the boat must have filled up with people, because quite a lot of people got off, you know, all sorts of service personnel. And we boarded a train, and the next thing, I'm in Aldershot in a tent, in a bell tent. So really, you know, we were plied with tea and wads at Folkestone. And so it was a very, an obscure trip across the channel.
Was that train and the camp at Aldershot, was it full of really shattered blokes?
It was full of people from, I suppose, Aldershot was a huge military, it always has been, hasn't it? Yeah. And I suppose they had this, knew what was happening, and there were tents everywhere. It was all very... they were being put up in some areas, but the next day, we went along, and I think we said who we were, because I had my paybook and everything else, and I'm being a medic, so the next day I was on a train for Gloucester, outside the Bryant and Mays match factory. It is Bryant and Mays, isn't it? Or one of the people, yeah, it was one. So really, that in 2 days, I that is all that happened in those 2 days. So you understand that my trip across the channel from Dunkirk or Bray Dunes then, which is just north of was a very, well, I'll say, a blank affair, because I was asleep, having not slept, and having travelled all through the night as well, I suppose running, walking, or whatever method to get north. I knew where I was going. I didn't know it was going to be Dunkirk, but I knew it was going to be somewhere due north, which, you know, I know where north is at night, and all day, for that matter. But so I made it to Bray Dunes just after dawn. You know,
so were you allowed to rest up at Gloucester then for some time, or what happened?
Well, no, what happened within days, several people, I was billeted in, well, God knows what it was, like a little, I suppose, it could have been a small factory or building I was billeted in, and after a few days I was shipped to Leeds, at Cuthbert, near Leeds, you know, the great hockey town, but Cuthbert, a mining. Beautiful people, lovely people. And I was billeted with an old dear, two of us, that was Ian Evans and myself. He was another chap who'd got back via some other way from, we were all spread around Castleford in the area until we were reformed, I don't know how many weeks later, we reformed in, a place called Burg Wallis, which was outside Castleford, and an area on the Yorkshire Moors we reformed into, the whole unit, well, not the whole unit, the ADS part of the unit, started up there in, was near Burg Wallis, on the Yorkshire Moors. It was I should think it was a racing stable or something, because, you know, courtyard and all these buildings and things, I think it was a racing stable or a private stable, or a big house. And eventually, by devious means, we arrived in, in Sussex, a place near Battle, Normanhurst Court in Sussex. We were there several weeks before the unit moved to Kent, in the Marine Barracks at Kent, and made up a little hospital there. Temporary thing for the expected invasion, I suppose, because it was an invasion area, wasn't it, Deal, and that area of the coast, one of the nearest points to the, you know, the French mainland or the German occupation forces. So that's why, you know, I ended up there, and I told you, I think, that we came out of there and went to a place called Kenfield Hall in near Canterbury, Chartham, Canterbury, and I did some psychiatric nursing there. There was a big psychiatric centre, but I think I explained that our unit was broken up because of various things that happened with the administration of our PRI fund. Mm. And so I ended up for a year in Sheerness Military Hospital, which was right on the Thames Estuary for Sheerness. Right. And it was a garrison town with troops and naval personnel, I suppose, defending the Thames Estuary.
When you got back from Dunkirk those first few days afterward, was it an overwhelming feeling of relief and having escaped from
death? Well, it was certainly relief. I mean, what was a relief was, you know, not to be on the move. Well, although I was on the move, not being sort of forced to move this way, that way, running here, running there, and, you know, trying to get out. Obviously, the 44th Division was cut off by the Germans, you know. They broke through south, didn't they? And consequently, and then they proceeded north, German divisions, to cut off the British Expeditionary Force, which came out through a lot of them via Dunkirk or Belgium or there, but most of them ended up at Dunkirk or Bray Dunes. They didn't end up in Dunkirk itself, because that was a port anyway. It's chiefly a port and town, but obviously with the bombing and so forth, it wouldn't have been a safe place to be anyway. But Bray Dunes, the north, it was a big, long, sandy stretch, you know, about, God knows, when you look at it, it looks 10 miles long, you know, and on reflection, but it's Bray Dunes that I could show you on the map. But I've been there since, actually, with my son. There's a road goes north from there, where you go, you know, towards Belgium, Brussels, and then moving on I've been that back that way myself a couple of times, going to Austria, because he lives in Austria, my eldest son. But the Dunkirk episode itself was just a question of the sort of maybe 48 hours before, well, maybe more than that, but those 48 hours, practically no sleep. We were just moving, trying to get out of the way of whatever was happening. And then completely overwhelmed by a column of German troops and three tanks, I think it was three or four tanks, firing at us. Well, there was only one thing, to get out as quick as you could and get out of this farmyard, which was an enclave or a surrounded area, but we just had to get out. There was no way to get out to our vehicles. Well, our vehicles were there, but several of them on fire, and I went out to them because I heard a yell, but one of our lads was shot in the stomach. He was looking after some sick people, and Bill Lomans, his name wasn't, but it was terminal, you know, he'd been hit, and he didn't make it. And it was a question of moving, everybody getting out quickly.
Was that depressing? I mean, you were defeated, so was...
Oh yeah, well, we were medics, we weren't defeated as such, but we didn't have any choice but to to move out, you know.
But did that seem to be a signal that we're going to lose the war? Is that what people thought?
Well, you could have said that. If you've seen the size of this German column in relation to our forces, which were sort of gun emplacements here and a few Bren gun carriers there. I mean, the 44D was a very mobile force, I must admit, but it was only mobile in as much that it was limited as far as its operating facilities, its guns. It didn't have many. We had 8-inch howitzers, 25 pounders. I know that because we saw them. We were in amongst them, being an ADS, but advanced dressing station, that is. But basically, once the Germans had broken through, they were a superior force, and there wasn't any way but for whoever was in charge was to get everyone out as quick as they could. There wasn't a strong enough force there. Even with the French and Belgian forces, there wasn't strong enough force to combat a well-trained, which obviously the Germans were, they must have been very well-trained to achieve what they did in the time of them. No, I'm not a warmonger, as far as I'm concerned.
No, it's obvious.
I would have thought that whoever, the tragedy started long before that, in the 30s, when things should have been done. Not too late in the 40s, wasn't it?
Yeah. Let's shift on to D-Day.